Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Mike Wise Show is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Mike Wise Show is hosted by a guy who played basketball atrociously for Hawaii Pacific College, which forced him into journalism. And, oh yeah, he wrote about basketball for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and ESPN. He's also a wise ass, and so are many of his guests. Right, Mike?
Thanks, Darlene. Cassidy Hubbard has done a little bit of everything in her years at ESPN. From NBA Tonight and NBA Coast to Coast, she has gone on to host Countdown, The Jump, Hoopstream, SportsCenter, and the College Football Studio on ABC. She's worked on the ESPYs and handled sideline reporting for the NBA on ESPN. She's also been killing it, patrolling the sidelines in the Orlando bubble. And she's also the mom of a beautiful daughter whose next birthday will be her second. And according to our producer, Cass is one of the five greatest living Americans. Is that too much of a buildup, Miss Cassidy Hubbard?
I'm not worthy.
Stop it.
Just keep it up. We could do the whole 30 minutes on that.
Go ahead.
I was a young 8-year-old watching Michael Jordan win championship.
but the coolest thing is the last time I think I saw you in person was at Allen Iverson's Hall of Fame induction. I don't know if you remember. Maybe it was after that. But either way, it was a great night. I think Shaq got inducted that night. Yao Ming. It was one of those great nights. And, you know, pardon my ignorance, I had no idea you were a mom. That's crazy. Oh,
yes. I'm pretty private about my private life, but I became a mom almost, like you said, almost 2 years ago. And it's changed my life, you know, for all the things. As you know, as a parent, it is. Feel all the feelings all of the time, and I am 6 weeks here into the bubble, so I am missing her desperately right now.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. When I spoke with Howard Beck recently about it, and I said, you know, some of these players are talking about the mental health aspect of being away so long, and I thought, for someone that's away from their child who you don't get to see for 6 weeks and they grow so much during that time, that must be torture inside. You can do FaceTime all you want, having been away at the Olympics before and seen my 2-year-old or my 4-year-old, but it's not the same.
This bubble would not have survived or been as successful if it weren't for FaceTime. But have you ever tried to FaceTime a toddler? Like, it's the worst.
They got worse ADD than I do as an adult.
She wants no part of it. Right. And so I need to get home ASAP before she, you know, starts calling the nanny mama. But I will say I've been really triggered lately seeing all these kids around, you know, like Fred VanVleet's kids and
No point will the powers that be at Disney say, "Hey, Cassie, we'll have a little daycare for you. We're going to bring your little one in." Or do you even want to go there now that, you know, where are you on that?
Yeah, I just hope I don't grab one of Fred's kids and hug them, because that's probably a no-no. But, you know, it's actually a very big point of contention right now, because, you know, not even to get into the media is never going to be considered to allow their family here. But coaches have been speaking up, you know, so players are allowed to bring family and more than one family member. Whereas coaches, you heard Mike Malone, you know, have his plea where he was emotional about, and he called it criminal. I don't know if I would go as far as saying it's criminal, but it's not right that these coaches who have to perform as much as the players do don't get to have loved ones. And so the NBA recently, at the beginning of this week, sent out a memo that each team can have 10 family members, but no more. So you're talking about a staff of 25 to 27 people. And what I've been hearing is just a lot of tension around that, because it puts a lot of pressure on leadership, whether it be the GMs or the coaches, to decide which one of their staff members is allowed to bring a family member. And it's not just, hey, you can bring, you know, your family. It's you can bring one person. So it's
ten people per team for the
staff, front office, and the coaches. And so what you're talking about, like, so not only do the coaches, and so what I'm hearing from some GMs, it's like, who am I? What's it going to look like, and what kind of message is it going to send if I bring my wife here, and then my assistant or my security guard or the training staff can't bring their spouse or loved one? And so it's creating a lot of tension right now. And, you know, Brad Stevens has been very vocal about not having his family here. And you could tell every single chance he has, he's been saying, I want my family here. And he says he's been talking to the NBA about it since May. So it's, look, you're right. And we're hearing a lot about, you know, mental health. Obviously, you know, it's a big topic in sports right now because of what Dak Prescott said. But I think a lot of these conversations in the bubble have been happening, you know, off of what Paul George said, the isolation here. It's not easy in this.
I don't envy. I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, that's pretty much what I wanted to say. It's just you know, like for these players, and a lot of people say, hey, you make millions of dollars, like, suck it up. They're still human. And, yeah, you know, I've had conversations with even LeBron James and how he's so used to chaos around him, the pressure, the distractions. And that's part of how these players deal with the extreme pressures of the playoffs and performing, is having a loved one to go home to, or even just like a crowd to kind of drown out the noise that's in your head. But these guys are like all of us, we are just in this Groundhog Day where it's, you know, practice, games, back to our rooms by ourselves, and unfortunately looking in our phones. You know, I made a mistake. I accidentally called Luka Doncic 19 years old instead of 21, and the Mavs hive came at me, and I'm like, you know, 3 a.m. being like, I didn't mean to, I just made a mistake. And so I'm at such a small level, you know, can't imagine like what Paul George went through that time when he was in that shooting slump. And I saw it on his face, and I talked to him about it. And he says, it's just not the same without fans and without the distraction, and without the chaos to kind of snap your mind out of, you know, kind of being hard on yourself.
I think it's not, I wouldn't say criminal, but aside from being a service person overseas, it just feels wrong. Because even in these times of COVID, it's still, you're quarantining your family, not from the virus, but their own family. And I feel it's wrong. And I understand that's part of the NBA's business model. That's what had to happen. But at some point, you know, the NBA could almost make their, you know, how they have these incredible commercials or moments at games, especially NFL games, where someone's on the court and they're whisk around, and all of a sudden their dad from Iraq shows up courtside. You're gonna have that with NBA players, you know. Your husband will show up from Bristol. It'll be like a moment for the cameras.
Yes, exactly. Here's the thing. What it comes down to is we're about a month away from, you know, crowning a champion, and we're already 2 months into this. So, you know, the NBA is going to be extra cautious. And, you know, we've already had some violations from some players. We're dealing with something with Daniel House right now. So, like, I understand the NBA's stance as to why they're being this over. None of this is perfect. This is the making the best out of a bad situation. But what the NBA,
go ahead.
Yeah, but what the NBA is showing is that, you know, it's better to be safe than sorry. And it's just unfortunate because it is a lot. And then on top of that, they're trying to get this done and over with. So it's been grueling every other day that these players are playing games. So, you know, that's also kind of like feeding into the monotony of, you know, life here in the bubble.
I'm still shocked that if I was an NBPA lawyer, I'm still shocked that they did not have a clause put in the agreement which allowed hoochie mamas into the bubble.
Oh my God.
They can meet them.
Mike.
At the, Bruce is really good about editing me out at times I'm trying to break the ice.
Look, here's the thing. Players are allowed to bring partners or spouses. There are some players here who have girlfriends. But the thing is that, like, people also have lives. You know, there's some people who, for instance, Chris Paul, when I talked to him, I asked him when he was still – when the Thunder were still in it, I said, is your family coming? And he goes, no, my kids are in school. So there's a lot of, like, as much as people want to bring some family members or, you know, or some people may have work, some spouses, some partners. So, like, real life here, it's a big commitment because it's not just, hey, I'm popping over to Orlando for a weekend. You have to, when all these guests have to quarantine for 7 days. And so, like, Dennis Schroeder's wife, an absolute saint, because she quarantined for 7 days with an 18-month-old and a 1-month-old.
And when you explain quarantine, you're talking, if they have to be in the room, they don't leave the room.
Can't leave. And then being served food, you know, from the hotel. So I don't know how, you want to know the awful thing about this? And it just deserves the wife of the year. She only was out of quarantine and got to see one game and then had to go. Because they got bounced. So she quarantined for 7 days.
Wow.
She couldn't even come to the game because she has, oh, by the way, a 1-month-old and an 18-month-old. And, but look, you know, that's true love right there.
I blame it all on Chris Paul. Actually, it was kind of cool to see him play for the first time in really – you know, September. I never saw him play in June. That was the first time I got to see him play in September.
Yeah. Anyone.
What?
Well, anyone playing in a playoff game.
Well, this is true. Yeah. I always say, like, the person who wins it all is going to be like Mr. October. You're in the green zone, which is the most tightly controlled since you have direct contact with the players and coaches. I know you've talked about it a little bit, but how restricted are your movements when you're not doing a game?
So here's the thing, because I'm media and I am on the same campus as the Grand Destino, which is where everyone but the Rockets are. The Rockets are still at the Grand Floridian. They're going to move over if they advance past the Lakers.
Not happening.
they would move to the Grand Destino, which would be really annoying to think about because they've pretty much been settled in their rooms for 2 months and then we have to, the Blazers had to do that. And they behind the scenes were complaining how much of a headache that was. And then they, you know, obviously they fizzled out against the Lakers in games 2 through 5. Cause it's a lot. I mean, I've moved in here. I'm in my room right now. It took me 6 hours to move into this place. And I'm not looking forward to what it's going to be like to pack up and leave.
You don't have someone to do that for you?
No, no one's allowed in my room.
that's another thing I would have got written into my contract.
No one's allowed in your rooms. All the staff members, you know, they have to keep a safe distance from us. They're all in face shields and masks because they leave the campus. I mean, they get tested every day, but they leave and come back in Florida. So, you know, there's that. And as far as, like, so I said I'm on the Grand Destino, so we share the campus with players. So because of that, the NBA put in a lot of restrictions on where we're allowed to go. And so it's, you know, There's really not that many places that media is allowed to go here on this campus. We have one little restaurant area and they just like opened up a bar area, but there's this restaurant across a bridge called the Three Bridges Restaurant that, you know, looks so nice. I look at it like it's like Nobu or Carbone, like like this restaurant that is like 5-star Michelin just because I can't go to it.
Okay, right.
And I'm just like looking at it longingly.
It's the toy in the window during Christmas. Yes,
exactly.
You're never going to see it.
Right. I can't go there. I can't run around. I can't go to, there's like a player's pool, which obviously we have our own pool, which I don't go to. There's a gym, but there's a sign-up sheet for the gym and only 3 people are allowed in it at a time. And the sign-up sheet is always full. So I don't go to the gym either. So it's just, there's a lot of restrictions, but look, the NBA is doing, you know, such a good job at, and making this thing work. So
the fact that the season's going to, yeah, I mean, the fact that the season's going to, it looks like it's going to come to a completion without an interruption is just a shock, other than the protests. I think it's incredible, and it's, as much problems as I had with it sort of being, hermetically sealed off from real life and all the problems with the COVID facing the Orlando area right now, it's provided a service, and I've gotten into it, and a lot of people have gotten into it, and obviously network partnerships are being fulfilled. When I was covering eons ago the Knicks on a beat basis, or anytime I was writing a column for the Post or the Times or even ESPN, we always bonded with not so much our bosses, people in the office, because we didn't see them as much. We bonded with people that we traveled with, and they often were our competitors. Do you find yourself hanging out with Stephanie, Rebecca Harlow, Malika Andrews, Jared Greenberg, that crew, while you're there, or is that even off limits?
Well, definitely Malika, since I, you know, work with her at ESPN, and you know, our whole crew down here. So it's me. In tier one, that is, it's me, it's Woj, Mark Spears, Malika, and then we have a producer named Melinda, and a guy who was working with me named Raj for the most part, and he just left, and then Andrea has just come in to take over, and she's going to be working a lot with Rachel Nichols, who's in quarantine right now, who's going to be doing the Eastern Conference Finals and Finals on the sidelines, and of course the Jump. So our little family, like, we have to communicate every day as far as, you know, how are we going to attack the day, as practices, live shots, all of that. So we're a very close-knit group. I entered quarantine with Rebecca, and I've known Rebecca for a really long time, and she's the best. She's such a sweetheart, and we really helped each other, you know, kind of get accustomed to the lay of the land here. Yeah. And, you know, we would pick up each other's packages from the package room, and, you know, kind of talk to each other about certain things that happened in practices that we, you know, didn't do. But as far as, like, not to like bring out my tiny, tiny violin, I just haven't had time to hang out with
smallest
people.
In the world.
Yes. I've worked every 9 PM game, you know, since being here. And my first couple of weeks I was having sometimes 2 games a day, which, is
no,
still,
I saw you. You were
still
working
back on that. Like, to do 2 regular season games in a day is crazy. Like, I'm used to doing maybe a summer league game. That's a summer league game. I was doing 2 playoff games a day. So it's been nonstop. It's been an amazing, rewarding situation in so many ways, but I haven't really had a lot of time to kick back and relax and catch up with people. I catch up with people at games, of course, all those people, Jared as well.
I think that it's people hear you saying that and in real world, the downloaders and the listeners, and they'll go, oh my gosh, she's
complaining. I know.
I used to do this about the Olympics. I would never say it publicly, but the Olympics I've covered 7 Olympics. It's the greatest thing I'll ever cover in my life because of all the emotion, everything that happens at the Olympics. And if you don't cry as a reporter at the Olympics, you're not human. You need a heart transplant. But when you tell people you're away from your family for 3 weeks and I had to go to the Olympics, they go, oh, too bad for you. Well, you're working. You're actually working your butt off, and you're trying to get you're trying to get your company's money's worth, for one. And two, in this situation, it's such a unique thing. Putting aside the lifestyle issues, how is the performance of your job different than it was during the to this person who I'm doing a podcast?
Yes, the fact that that's your ringtone is amazing.
Oh, you like the Eye of the Tiger? Yeah, I It makes me work out. But at any rate, yeah, like people don't understand. What I was going to ask you is the performance of your job different than it was during normal pre-COVID games?
Well, to your point, you know, about like the listeners, you know, probably being like, wah, wah, wah. It's, you know, it could be both things. I am so fortunate and grateful I've had this opportunity, but it's been challenging in many ways. And, you know, on the court, just the social distance interviews and breathing through a mask. I had to do a stand-up yesterday and I was embarrassed because I had to do multiple takes because my breathing was all off. And I couldn't get through. It was like a minute 30 of just talking. And it just, you know, it's just learning and adjusting how to project on air while talking through a mask. And also some of these coaches, like, yes, there are no fans. NBA has done such a great job of pumping in sound, to create some energy for, these players. And when I do my, you know, between quarter interviews with the coaches, there are times where they don't turn the music down and I'm like 6 feet away from the coaches and these poor coaches are like, huh, what are you saying? you know, that's a little challenging. Just so like, there's some points where they, you know, they just can't hear me. And then some of the players at the end have said to me, it's just so weird talking to someone so far away.
Yeah.
But I will say overall, like, no complaints about my access. Like, I was worried because of all the rules and regulation, I wasn't going to, you know, be able to have a lot of access because, you know, they were saying you can't do a lot of walk and talks, which is kind of like the heart of, you know, reporting is to be able to get some moments, talk to these guys one-on-one, but it's been the opposite. I mean, this has been typically when I do games outside the bubble, I fly in to a city. Okay. And so I'll fly in the day before, try to catch a practice if they don't have a back-to-back, or I'll go to the shoot around in the morning. And then a lot of these teams don't do shoot arounds anymore. It's like the age of the, you know, load management. But in this environment, to have all these teams in one space, there were days early on when I was doing, you know, two games in a day where, you know, I was going to four or five practices in one day. And just being able to not only gather information, but have those players see me, have those coaches see me, become familiar with them understanding that I'm going to be covering their game. Mm-hmm. Like that's invaluable to a reporter. And I don't need to tell you that. So
no, right.
It's been as much as like these inconveniences have, you know, been something to adjust to. It's certainly been incredibly rewarding. And, you know, my whole goal going into this situation was if I don't come out of it a better reporter and who, you know, has built my network and my relationships, then I just wasted 6 weeks of my life.
Well, I think you're in a bonding situation too, where I liken it to, and probably not like this, but when I wrote Shaq's autobiography and I spent 10 days with him in Orlando, I will never get those days, you know, I would never want to take those days back because I get to know him like few people did. And it's the same way, like, you're not covering someone in their element as much as bullshitting with them and getting the vibe of who they are and what they're about. And people will remember your face and the conversations they had with you 10 years from now when you're running the network, and they'll go, I remember Cassidy Wynn when she was just a sideline reporter.
Last night I got some time with LeBron because after every single press conference, he waits for Anthony Davis.
Right.
So he waits for him. If Anthony Davis waits for LeBron if he's doing the walk-off and vice versa. And then when they do the media scrum, which is not really a scrum anymore, he waits off to the side. And typically LeBron is surrounded by millions of people, just whether it be his friends, his agent, his business partners, whatever. But in this environment, he's not. He's just, so last night he was just sitting there waiting for Anthony Davis, eating grapes. And so I went over to him and was able to have a conversation about, you know, how he prepares his body. And like, I would never get that opportunity in any other environment. So, you know, that will be something that I'll probably cherish for the rest of my career. Oh. I have moments with one of the greatest of all time.
And you know what? He'll remember it too, because you probably asked some good questions. You had a conversation. I've found the more famous guys get, the more they want to be treated like people. And the more people that put them on a pedestal, they're just kind of, you know, especially someone that's mature and self-aware and life experience like LeBron, he's probably like, you know what? I am maybe the greatest basketball player of all time. In fact, I was going to bring this up. Bruce and I feel like, and I covered Jordan in his prime, and I know you'll never say this because you are a Bulls fan. You're the pride of Evanston Township High School. I believe in 2002, while I was still at the New York Times, you won a frickin' state soccer championship.
Whoa, look at that.
Who knows their Wikipedia now, huh, sister? And I think that based on your, you know, you're a Chicago woman through and through in that area, and I think it'd be hard for you to go there. And I saw Jordan, but my feeling is nobody will be more spectacular. But I look at the greatest of all time, longevity, the be able to play. I mean, Jordan's final year of real greatness was his 35th year. He played two more years with the Wizards, and it was kind of a creaky-kneed veteran who had a couple great moments and was still Michael at times. But his great LeBron, I think, can be great until he's 38, and with the way he's going. And maybe he'll have a slip off in 2 years, but he's just such a, and I look at, if anybody, and I guess you could say this about Kawhi Leonard too, if anybody wins, hey, would you guys keep it down? I'm trying to have a podcast. if anybody has a claim to greatest player of all time, it's gotta be somebody that's won three championships as the alpha male with three different organizations. Do you agree?
I
know you're not going to.
No, okay. Look, this is how I view the Jordan versus LeBron debate.
Okay.
There were times early on, obviously, that I said, you know, it's Jordan bar none. But of course, LeBron deserves to be in the conversation. There's no doubt about it. And I think that conversation, why can't it just be now? That they are both great. And to me, Jordan just won't be knocked off of the pedestal of goatness because of what he established.
The pedestal of goatness. We got to patent that.
Yes, because what he established for the superstar. He created the superstar, international superstar, and expanded the NBA in ways that, you know, no one had, and created these lanes to be personal brands for NBA players today. So I just think that fact alone just cements him there. But at the same time, like, I am not by any means denying how LeBron has evolved that position of being a superstar, being the face of the league, and being more than an athlete. And what he's done off the court cements him on the pedestal of goatness as well. So I just think LeBron deserves all the flowers. And, you know, if we're talking about personal achievements, I think his, you know, the amount of times he's been to the NBA finals, even though he's lost some, is as great as a accomplishment as like winning six titles. I've never held the losses against him, given he got to that pinnacle time and time again. So to me, I find that to be incredibly impressive. And some of the teams he dragged along with him. And if you think about the performances he had in those finals, and just looking at him today, I mean, he's 35. I'm a year older than him, and I can barely do the elliptical for 30 minutes. And this man is, you know, working out after these games. I'm just kidding. I can do the elliptical for 30 minutes. I'm just saying.
wait. Let's backtrack.
Yes.
You're 36 years old?
Yes. Asian don't raisin.
Oh, man. Well, once you go Caucasian, once you go white, you look like graphite.
you pulled that out.
Yeah, I did. I just pulled that out. You're growing up in Hawaii, I'm really familiar with sort of that culture. And, you know, in my little community of Eva Beach, I was a minority. And it was like everybody should be on the other side of the fence once in their life. And some of my Some of the people I'm still in touch with are really good friends, happen to be Filipino. Whenever someone gives me that pancit or the lumpia,
pancit or lumpia,
oh my God, with a little vinegar sauce, it's like the best thing there is.
It's over with.
Is your mom who is Filipino or your dad?
I was just talking to someone about how, you know, because the question that everyone asks, it's like, it does sometimes feel like we're talking like we're in jail or something, which couldn't be further from the truth. We're in actually a fantasy land of basketball, which is amazing. But it was like, people always ask, so what's the first thing you have when you get on the outside, you know, to eat? Because the food here is repetitive. I mean, yeah. It does a good job, but it's very repetitive. And, you know, having some lumpia, like on a holiday when my family will put out the lumpia first and you're waiting for the main course, like I would crush like 50 of those things.
Do they make them with the little red sauce, with the vinegar red sauce? Yeah. Oh, God, that thing is so good.
It's delicious.
Or like,
egg rolls.
What about like those invisible noodles? What do they call them?
Yeah, that's pancit. Yeah.
That is pancit. Okay.
Yeah, it's a good luck dish.
Yeah.
You know, birthday or, you know, whenever you're trying to celebrate something.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And your mother's side is German.
My mom was born and raised in the Philippines. My dad's German-Irish.
Oh, German-Irish. And I want to say, what part of Germany is his family from?
I don't know, honestly.
My mom was from
Michigan, that part of Germany.
Yeah, yeah. And you went to the University of Illinois, and then you got a Bachelor of Science from the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, and Michael Wilbon vouched for you, and you got a job at ESPN. Is that how it happened?
No, Wilbon didn't vouch for me.
I know he didn't. You worked your way up. You paid your dues. I saw your resume.
Much later. Yeah. Yes, the Medill Mafia is strong, though.
Yeah, it is. It's nice.
Mess with us.
Yeah, I like that. Real quick lightning round before we let Cassidy Hubbard go. I have to say, are you creeped out by the virtual fans at all?
No, I think it's incredible.
Really? I have nightmares of them popping up in my dreams.
No, I think it's crazy what the NBA has been able to do. Yeah. They put together in two months to be able to get that technology and to allow fans to be at someone. And I think it's kind of cool when they have celebrities pop in there and they're watching games. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's no aspect of Big Brother. It's just, it's fun. I think it would, you know, the environment would be worse if there wasn't at least some sort of fan interaction, because it added an extra layer of atmosphere. So not to play Debbie Downer there, but yeah.
Yeah, it's, no, it's that works. You don't have to agree with everything. I like when you disagree with me. It makes for more, like I had Jason Whitlock on. He hates me now. He won't actually call me again. And it's okay because I've written him off. But you... One of the reasons I had you on is not just because I feel like we share a lot of the same values in life, knowing what I do about you from our mutual friend, Om Yongmi Suk. Om is such a good guy. I wanted to ask you, how have you felt about the various social justice initiatives the league and the players have collaborated on? Because that became the show for a couple of weeks. And whether it was Roger Mason Jr. coming on or Garrett Temple, they were just so real and honest about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was palpable here. And I will tell you that I heard from a number of players who started packing after that Wednesday night meeting, and being on campus here and feeling the anger, the sadness, the disappointment, the tension of playing and distracting from what they thought was distracting from the message, and you know, just how painful it was to watch that video of Jacob Blake. So, you know, I do feel like it was starting to reach a boiling point even before that video was released. I think players were, you know, I think the mental health aspect was starting to catch up to some guys. You know, they'd been here for like close to a month and a half, if not more. And it was getting really, really intense because the playoffs had started. So that first week of playoffs of games every other day, you know, I think was starting to get to some guys. And then, you know, when the video came out, I think everything came to a head where people started questioning, like, why are we here? Like, why are we making these sacrifices? Why are we distracting from this movement? And I think that's why that meeting on Wednesday night was so contentious, because people were so raw and the players were feeling so much. And so it's so impressive what they were able to accomplish in 48 hours, and not just the leadership of Chris Paul and LeBron James, but just even I heard like some of the rookies like did PowerPoint presentations during that meeting, and no one knew that meeting was going to happen on that Wednesday night because no one knew the Bucks were going to boycott that game. So for them to have not only gathered and figured out that all the players needed to meet at 8, get all their frustrations out that night, then come back the next morning, decide they're going to have a call with the owners, and then have a plan of actionable items on Thursday to get back to work. It just was, it was just an example of the heart of this league and the commitment to being more than an athlete in this league. And it's just, I'm proud to be a part of a small part of the NBA and to help those guys get that message out.
I think it's awesome. So the renaissance of social conscience among athletes has just been one of the most incredible things. And anybody that says otherwise, this isn't a left right thing. It's not an independent Democrat Republican. It's a human thing. And I think people, irrespective of whether you disagree or don't disagree, or you disagree or agree with Black Lives Matter, any of the movements, you should respect people's right to have conviction about it. Beyond, you know, they're using the game for more than just wealth and fame, and that's what we all should be doing in our professions and our careers. You know, it's leaving the next generation, your kids, my kids, to something better. All right, two more, real quick. Fishing. Have you caught a fish yet? I heard it's really easy to catch fish there. Or you just don't like fishing.
I'm like, wow. I haven't had time to go fishing.
I'm going for a day. You're like,
the other thing is like, I have these 9 o'clock games. I'm not falling asleep until 4 or 5. And this is what some of these players are talking about too. It's hard to fall asleep after a 9 p.m. game. And I'm not walking out of the arena until 1:30. And then, you know,
you need something to eat and your butt and you got that
at 8 o'clock because I need that energy to perform. Yeah. And so it's just threw me out of whack. So I kind of tried to sleep in. And then as soon as I wake up, I got to go to practices. So I haven't, you know, fished yet. I don't really have a desire, honestly, fish. It would be nice to go on the boat and in the water and feel human again, but I'm leaving here soon. So I will.
No, you're not actually. This is the one thing I'm breaking some news to you on. I like Rachel Nichols. She's a good person and everything. I've purposely put some weird diuretic in her food, and she is not going to make it through quarantine. And you and Malika will probably be getting extra shifts. I just want to let you know this before. And are you okay with that?
And they're going to need to talk to my husband. They're going to have to hear
and your daughter.
He's already saying, well, you better, because it all depends on what happens in these games this weekend. So, let's just say in my household, there's some cheering going on for particular teams. I'll just put it that way.
All right. Okay. I get it. Lastly, I believe that, I don't know why, I just feel like LeBron is going to win another title this year, and that essentially the Clippers-Lakers Western Conference final, if it comes to pass, will be like the NBA championship in many ways. I could be wrong. The Celtics look very good some nights. Who knows about Toronto now? And certainly Miami. A Miami LA final would be great. What?
They're the hottest team in the bubble, the Miami Heat.
Oh, yeah, they are. No, they are. And Spoelstra, you know, Eric Spoelstra is going to the Hall of Fame before this tournament, but now it's a first ballot cinch. But I don't know. I just feel like LeBron is going to find a way against Kawhi and Paul George. I might be wrong, But your thoughts, if you had a prediction.
I think I never bet against LeBron.
Yeah, I like that.
But these Clippers are just...
But?
They're so talented.
Clippers, you like the Clippers?
The Clippers just have so much talent on
Their depth is much better.
And Doc is... Just being around him, especially going back to, you know, the week of the pause, he's just such an inspiring leader. And, you know, if he can get, I know there's been a lot of chemistry issues with this Clippers team, but I can see them kind of figuring it out against the Lakers. Because the big, big issue with both those teams is sometimes they check out, and we saw in Thursday night's game, like the Lakers had a huge lead and they just like took their foot off the gas because, you know, they rest on their laurels and rest on how much talent they do have. But I just find like that series, if it happens between the Clippers and Lakers, could go down as one of the best playoff series that, you know,
of all time. I think it's got I think it's like Kings Lakers in 2002 or something, the Western Car. There's so many, you know, the Warriors and the Cavs in 2016. I mean, many things.
Yes, but like even then, even the Warriors and Cavs, like I know Kyrie, but like Anthony Davis is the most talented guy LeBron has had on his team.
Oh, by far. I mean, he's no Anderson Varejao, but you know, he's up there. He's up there.
Exactly. And he has, you know, Deion Waiters again. But
this is true.
It's just going to be him versus Kawhi, like those two guys going at it, like Kawhi, the closest thing to as far as like how Jordan played his game.
Yeah.
You know, just a surgeon from mid range, and defensively. I think it's going to be quite the battle royale.
I think you're right. Before I let you go, this is my daughter, Margo. Can you see
Hi,
her?
Margo. Oh my goodness.
Margo is two and a half. She'll be three in January. So and if you had one message to send to your daughter on this podcast, because I know she's going to listen to it all, what would you say?
I carried you for 9 months. Don't you forget I'm your mama.
I love it. Oh man. Well, all good things, much gratitude. And this was great. And the biggest thing is, for all the great work you've done, I wish I could see your face when you got back home to see your husband and daughter. Cause that's going to be a great moment.
Yeah. I can't even imagine what that first hug's going to feel like. So thank you so much for having me on and the kind words.
That was dope.
It's time to wrap things up for this week. Thank you very much to our guest, Cassidy Hubbard of ESPN, who's doing great work on the sidelines in the Orlando bubble. Thanks also to Cassidy's pal and my producer, Bruce Bernstein, as well as our talented editor, Tom Phillip. Please listen to all our Pure Hoops media shows. Full Court Press with Fanta and Adams comes your way each Tuesday with the best college basketball guests anywhere. Catch and Shoot 2.0 with Otto Strong and Aaron Berlin is here each Wednesday. And Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with Monica McNutt and King McClure drop in every Thursday. And you know about BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman. They're here every Friday with the Pure Hoops podcast. And I'm back next Monday with the Mike Wise Show. Please listen, review us, and leave a 5-star rating. And now for my weekly sermon. On the hills of Golgotha. COVID-19 is still with us, though, so please wear your mask, wash your hands, and stay at least 6 feet away from others. And please treat everyone around you, even strangers, as friends, and be considerate of them. And don't forget to keep our medical professionals in your thoughts. They're still working hard every day to save lives. Also, we need all of you to continue working for social justice as we strive for a more just and inclusive society. So please do your part. Till next week, aloha.
The Mike Wise Show used to be called The Wise Ass Show, but it remains a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.